Father, we pray that you, at this time, you would open up our hearts and minds to the study of your word. And what a blessing it is, as it gives us and it supplies for us all the things that we need in this life. It leads us when we're in darkness and when we're unsure where to go. It strengthens us when we're weak and when we're down. And it provides us with advice for all stages of life. Father, may we place your word at the center of our life. May we walk by it and may we walk in his glorious light all of our days. May our thoughts and our actions and may everything that we do be influenced by your word, Father, the power that it possesses to protect us from sin and to lead us to you. We thank you for the study that we've had in the book of Judges. At this time, we pray that you would help us to open our minds and hearts to its message, that we might grow stronger in our faith through our study and through the things that we learn. We may learn from the bad examples of how not to live, and may we look to the positive things and that we might grow in our faith and our ability to serve in your kingdom, which is our desire in this life. Bless us in our endeavor and be with our teachers and students downstairs, and may their studies be edifying and beneficial to them as well. All to your glory and to your honor, Father. This is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, where did we leave off last week? What had been happening? Somebody kind of bring us up to speed. All right. Okay. Could you tell me that if that question went up on the screen there?
Yeah.
You're right. They were trying to save Benjamin.
That's the last thing me and you talked about.
Yeah. We did. You and I mentioned that. So chapters 19 through 21, you have the issue there with the Levite and his concubine and the terrible men at Gibeah who commit that awful crime. Then you got chapter 20 where they gather together. All of the nation of Israel just about gathers together to determine what they're going to do to deal with Benjamin. And they go to war. Israel loses twice, some 40,000 men die, and then finally God says, okay, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to give you victory, and he brings a victory in the third battle. And as a result of that, just through the ferocity and the anger and the pride, I think, motivating this last battle, Israel just about demolishes the people of Benjamin. You find out that there's only about 600 of them left. 600 men from Benjamin went and hid at the Rock of Rimmon, and Israel then went and sacked the entire city, men, women and children, animals, all of them were destroyed. So they just completely ravished the tribe of Benjamin. And as we read in the first few verses of chapter 21 last week, they step back, the fire of anger is now simmering, and they're able to see the damage that they've wreaked on their brother, Benjamin. They use that term frequently throughout here to show the camaraderie that should have existed. Their brother, Benjamin, and now they lament, what are we going to do for our brother, Benjamin? And so we left them kind of in the midst of trying to figure out, okay, how is there any way that we can save them? Two vows are brought to our attention that they made that we're not told about in chapter 20. One, they said that they were going to refuse to give anyone, no one would give their wives or their daughters, no one would give their daughters to the people of Benjamin to marry. And they all vowed that they wouldn't do that. Secondly, they said anybody that doesn't show up to help enact our punishment upon Benjamin, those people were going to be destroyed. So two very rash vows that they're now regretting and that are going to direct their behavior as they seek to revive the tribe of Benjamin with only 600 men left. Let's pick up and read verses 8 through 15 again, and we'll have a little bit of discussion. I think we answered that question, so we'll revisit it very briefly and then work our way through more of the text. Judges 21, picking up in verse 8. So the assemblies gathered together. They said, what one is there among the tribes of Israel who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah? And behold, no one had come from the camp of Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. And when the people were numbered, behold, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead was there. And the congregation sent 12,000 of the valiant warriors and commanded them, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, with the women and the little ones. This is the thing you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every man and every woman who has lain with a man. And they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man by lying with them. And they brought them into the camp at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. And then the whole congregation sent word and spoke to the sons of Benjamin, who were at the Rock of Rimmon, and they proclaimed peace to them. Benjamin returned at that time, and they gave them the women whom they had kept alive from the women of Jabesh-Gilead. Yet there were not enough for them. And the people were sorry for Benjamin, because the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. So question three, we'll just very briefly answer this to kind of set the tone for our next question. What plan is implemented by the people to save the tribe of Benjamin?
You
Well, summarize it. Indulge me.
Found 400 virgins in that city and brought them to and gave them to the men and women when they were hiding in the rock.
Okay. Now that I didn't really want that answer, Dick. I know we just read it, but it's a kind of a leading question. It sets us up. Thank you for answering that. So the reason I asked that question, which was what was their plan, which as Dick said is to go and destroy Jabesh-Gilead, because they didn't come to the assembly, so therefore they weren't subject to the vow of not giving their daughters. If you look, my summary of this chapter is called loopholes. They found a loophole that they could exploit, and that's what they did with the virgins of Jabesh-Gilead. Now, we answered that question to ask this one. Who was the source of that plan? Okay, the elders of the tribes. There was no king, and the people kind of governed themselves. And we're going to find out the refrain that's repeated throughout chapter 21 and chapter 20. There was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. And this is a manifestation of every man doing what was right in his own eyes. So previously, during the battle and the engagement with Benjamin, who had kind of been involved? Whose words were they going by, if you will? Okay. It was God's plan. They were communicating with God through the high priest. Shall we go to war? Who shall go? Yes, you shall go. And finally, God promises to give them victory. Point is, the people communicated with God to find out what does God want. Now, I think it's back in verse 4. After they step back and their anger is cooled, what did the people of Israel do? After they seen the damage that they was done, I think it's in verse 4. Okay. All right. They built an offer. They offer their sacrifices. They plead with God. And so it's like they're trying to gain some sense of direction. They finally succeeded in battle when God, at God's command, they listened to what he said. God gave them victory. And so now they've got another problem. Benjamin's just about eliminated. And so at least it seems like they have enough sense to realize we need to ask God what to do. And so they preface all of this by offering these sacrifices and burning these offerings and trying to offer up something before God so that maybe they can communicate, maybe his will can be communicated to them. We read nothing here of any indication that God answers what they had communicated. And so I'll say all that to bring us here. God is not involved with this plan that's going to be enacted by the people. This was a decision, as Tommy said, that was done by the elders and is done without the communication of God. God seems to have been quite silent in regard to how this situation should have been handled. And either he didn't want to get involved, or he was satisfied with what happened, or he was going to communicate it later and the people weren't patient enough. We don't know exactly what it was. But rather than waiting on God's response, they decided to get it up in their mind. Okay, what can we do to solve this problem that we've created? And so finally, we know the plan that they bring about. Who called the people to arms? You remember, think back a chapter or two. Who called the people to arms? Okay. He did that by sending out portions of the flesh to the tribes of Israel. They all assembled in response to the Levites' call to arms. He was the one that assembled. He made the complaint. And the point of that is, when you go back, that whole battle that took place, that doesn't seem to be, as I understand it and as I read it, that doesn't seem to be sanctioned by God, as I look at it. The Levite was the one that called the people to arms, and he's the one that pled his case. And then Israel determined, you know, okay, Benjamin needs to be punished. And then finally they bring God into the picture and they say, okay, how do we need to go about this, God? And it's finally when they humble themselves that God gives them victory. So the only battle sanctioned by God is this third skirmish in which Benjamin is finally defeated by the people of Israel. Here's another question for our discussion. Was Israel therefore right to punish Jabesh-Gilead for not assembling with the rest of Israel? Remember, this was summoned by the Levite. He was the one that was the one who brought them all together, the catalyst that brought them all together. Was this Israel right to punish Jabesh-Gilead for not assembling with the rest of Israel? What do you think?
Well, there is some precedent to it. In Numbers 32, 6, chapter 6, 7.
Okay.
There is examples that Hawkins said, and wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord will give you. Thus did your father, and he sent them to fish to seek over, talking about the 12 spies. But this is right before they they went into the land of Canaan and the tribes of Gad and Reuben was wanting to stay over there. He was talking to them about, you know, why should you stay here when your brothers are going across?
Okay. So there's a little bit of precedence. I would say there's a principle that's kind of laid down there. The application of that, Moses was getting on Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, because it seemed like Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh wanted to settle on the east side of the Jordan. Before the conquest of Canaan begun, they said, let us have the land east of the Jordan River. And he gets mad at him and he says, shall your brothers go to war while you just sit here? And shall you enjoy the promise of God while you don't do anything to help them receive their inheritance? And then they kind of clarify, they say, like Tommy pointed out, we'll go to war with them, we'll help them in battle, and then we'll go back and we'll inherit what God has given us. We just want to inherit on the other side of the Jordan. So there's a little bit of a precedent for it, but a specific application to that instance you bring out in Numbers 32, that was applied to dealing with the enemies, you know, of God. We'll go help you vanquish the Canaanites, but here we have Israel not at war with the Canaanites. What we've got them at war with is themselves. And so this assembly wasn't called forth by God. You know, you see God's involvement throughout Israel's history, the conquest of Canaan, like with the Battle of Jericho. You see his involvement with the plan and with how all of that's to happen. He gives them victory. You see just immediately in the next chapter Israel's decision to take on Ai without consulting God, and they're defeated at Ai. So when God helps them and they consult the word of the Lord, he gives them victory. And when they don't, then ever they're left to their own devices, they're left to the consequences that are oftentimes brought about because of their own devices. And as I read here, I don't really see that this was something that was handled by the Lord. He did step in and got involved in the circumstance at some point in time, but he doesn't seem to do so until after the Levite calls the assembly and they as a people decide we're going to punish these people rather than consulting God first. So were they right to punish Jabesh-Gilead? Anybody else want to take a stab at that? Okay.
So do they have a right? I can't find anywhere that they had a right to do that.
Okay.
Why these guys set out, I don't know. But to just decide, hey, let's go wipe these folks out so we can take care of the people we almost wiped out. Just to me, it's just one stupid decision.
Yeah, it's quite an ironic incident, isn't it? There's a lot of ironies that are found here, like you say, Dave. And I think Knuckleheads describes it pretty good. Describes the way that the children of Israel were acting. And you bring out a good point that I jotted down. We don't know why Jabesh-Gilead didn't come to the assembly. Maybe they had received the notification, but they chose, like we find out Reuben and a few of the other tribes later do. They were called to arms, but they refused to gather. Maybe they intentionally removed themselves from that. Maybe they didn't know. We don't know that they didn't receive the message. They were on the other side of the Jordan. So we don't know that the word of the Lord didn't get over, or the word of the people didn't get over there to them. And so whether it was ignorance, neglect, or defiance, we don't really know why it was. And what you do see earlier in the book of Judges, and technically this happens later, in Judges chapter 5 and verse 23. Let me go over there and read that real quick. It talks about the people of Meroz. And this is how they handled that earlier. In Judges chapter 5 and 23. Where Deborah's singing their song of victory and Barak has tried to rally the troops. Some of them have responded positively. Some of them haven't. And so the song in her song, Deborah says, "Curse Meroz," said the angel of the Lord. "Utterly curse its inhabitants because they did not come to help the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the warriors." And so you see once again in Judges 5, they're delivering the curse up in the hands of God. God, you're going to be the one that has to that determines how these people who didn't answer the call to battle need to be dealt with. But going back to question 3, the source of this plan, it seems to be human ingenuity. The people put their heads together and said, this is what we're going to do. God didn't tell us. This is what we're going to do. The Levite called the people to arms. It wasn't a divinely sanctioned battle. It was a result of the Levite. And so I'm kind of with you, Dave. I don't know that they had a whole lot of right to punish Jabesh-Gilead. Had God called the assembly, had God said, this is what you're going to do, And had God said, been disobedient to what God had commanded, then yeah, the people would have needed to be punished, I believe. But we don't know all of those things. And if they happened, well, they weren't recorded for us. And so Israel's activity and Israel's behavior toward Jabesh-Gilead, who, by the way, once again, these are their brothers, these are kinsmen, seems quite harsh. They seem to be taking justice into their own hands and acting independent of God. So verse 12 tells us that 400 virgins were taken from Jabesh-Gilead, and they were brought to Shiloh. At Shiloh, that's the location of the ark and the tabernacle at the time. Perhaps this was some perverted means of thinking, well, if we take them to the ark of the covenant or to the tabernacle, they can be purified, and then this whole ordeal can be sanctioned by the Lord. It seems like they're still seeking God's approval, but they're not going to find it. And finally, they send word to Benjamin of the 400 women that they found. So they extend the olive branch to Rimmon, and Benjamin comes. They take them the women that were given, the virgins of Jabesh-Gilead. Only problem, there were only 400 virgins found in Jabesh-Gilead. There were 600 men from Benjamin who were left. So you've got 200 bachelors. So the problem isn't completely solved. Let's see how they handle that here in a minute. Well, before we get there, question five. Who was responsible for the desolation of Benjamin? Okay. Okay. Anybody else want to chime in on that? Okay. Do you think God did it? Okay. That seems to be that's a common deal with God's people, right? We only want to call on them when we need them. All right, Tommy?
I think ultimately it's probably the tribe of Benjamin. They made a bad decision.
Okay.
To stand behind that small group of men in that one town. Israel made a pretty bad decision themselves, and we often see that today. You know, somebody makes a bad decision, and we have to be careful. We don't make a bad word.
Okay. Can you read Judges 21 verse 15 for us? Yes, sir.
And the people repented there for Benjamin because the Lord had made a breach in the tribe of Israel.
Does that change your perspective on who brought all of this about? The narrator lead us believe brought all this about? The Lord? As best I could gain, it's even though they don't seem to receive just a whole lot of communication from God, it's attributed to God. And you take that for what it's worth. I'm with you. I think we see this is the way God works. God works providentially. God works within the confines of what we as humans do. But yet, at the end of the day, it's God who controls all things. Yes, we individually make decisions, and the children of Israel and the Benjamites. I think, you know, both you and Dave and Steve, everybody's right. I believe that the Benjamins made a boneheaded decision when they backed up the men of Gibeah. I believe Israel made a boneheaded decision when they decided to go all out and just absolutely demolish the tribe of Benjamin. But yet, when it's communicated to us by the narrator, who, if we believe this book to be inspired, then once again, this is attributed to God. And yes, it was done through the hands of the people, but, you know, it's the Lord had made a breach between the tribes of Benjamin. Dave?
The thing that's missing here is mercy. There's no mercy shown to Benjamin.
Would you not call the very end of what we're reading right now, would you not consider that mercy?
Yes, in a sense, right? But I think it goes back to the title of blessed people.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no forethought. It's just, I don't know, to me, it's just
This is a very strange chapter. You know, some of this is kind of hard to reconcile. And so, you know, I'm with you. That mercy was definitely lacking. And if you want to call this lack, that last act, merciful, well, yeah, it's merciful maybe to the Benjamites, but maybe not so much to the people James killing.
I think it was guilt instead of mercy.
Okay.
And going back to the Bible, it's not that he didn't have a lying Levite who might have never gotten out of hand if he did. So, you know, God providentially caused it or let it happen because of sin.
Yeah, I mean, and... Yeah, but you do see sin involved, and like I say, you see God involved with so little, with this all of these events that happen. You see, they consult God whenever they're trying to determine who should go to battle. The only time God really anything good happens is whenever Israel gains victory in a third battle, because God says, "I'm going to give you victory." But all the rest of the time, God's pretty much silent. He's silent regarding the issue men of Jabesh-Gilead. He's silent regarding the people of Benjamin. And that's why I asked in question 6, you think God was pleased or displeased with Israel's plan to save the people of Benjamin from extinction? You know, we don't see a whole lot of whether God was happy or whether God was displeased or whether God was ambivalent. You know, we're just kind of left scratching our head. You know, that's how I feel after reading this. You know, God, what do you think about all of this? Well, on one hand, he let it happen. And on the other, in one hand, it's attributed to him. But on the others, there's a number of sins that are perpetrated in this event, and this is being brought forth, and we know that God's not happy whenever that happens. So, you know, it's hard to say. We read all of this and we don't always have the answers we want. So was God pleased or was he displeased? I don't know. He let it happen, but sometimes he, just because he allows something to happen doesn't mean that he's pleased with it.
He's never pleased with sin.
Right. Okay. Tommy? But which one? I've got 2 or 3 question files.
Last one. I know I was reading here in the King James Version, verse 15.
Mm-hmm.
How is it termed in the version that you read?
New American Standard says the people were sorry for Benjamin because the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel.
Okay. How is breach? How do you think that's used?
Breach?
A break?
Mm-hmm. Probably. Okay, avoid. I think that's a good terminology because there was something lacking. That's kind of the sense that you get when you read the tribe was just about lacking, and that's the people's complaint, that there would be a tribe found lacking, you know?
Okay. Yeah, didn't you make a point a few weeks ago about in Revelation where he's listed 12 tribes?
Mm-hmm.
It was Dan that was left out.
Mm-hmm. It was, and in fact, I actually went back and looked at in preparation for this. I think Benjamin's there in Revelation.
Okay.
Dan is the tribe that's left out from the events in 18 and 19. So, you know, but, you know, Johnny, I think the best thing we can do with a circumstance like this is God's not pleased with sin. God's never pleased with sin. And while the circumstances may have happened as perhaps God intended or he allowed to happen, however you want to look at that, the point of the matter is Benjamin had sinned. The men of Gibeah had sinned, and the people of Benjamin had sinned. And once, remember, Israel lost 40,000 people in the skirmish as well. Maybe that was God's judgment on them for what they had done. And then in turn, maybe his judgment on the Benjamites was the desolation of their tribe. And so you see losses on both sides. And so in a sense, you can see perhaps God's punishing both of these people for just their foolishness and their arrogance and their pride and their lack of concern about what gives God glory. So, well, you know, he allows all these things to happen. But that's just part of the wisdom of God, that he can accomplish what he wants to accomplish despite our efforts to perhaps try to mess things up and do what we think is best. And I think that's kind of what you see here. You know, the people of Benjamin were punished. The people of Israel were punished. And they're able to see really the division that exists between them. And when you take God out of the equation, what you've got is sin, and what you've got is loss, and what you've got is desolation and destruction. And that's what we see here in chapter 21. Dave? Okay. HB?
promise of Israel victory, entering to Israel put it on the tail end of the problem.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You know, he didn't. Right. Now, you know, I guess that would kind of be left up to them. And you know, had they taken into other things that God had commanded, then perhaps they wouldn't have exterminated them to the degree that they had. But then had they not, maybe Benjamin would have regrouped. Maybe Benjamin would have made war. Maybe there would have been, you know, civil war continuing. You know, it's just, and I know I'm the one that asks these questions, but sometimes you have to kind of be careful going out there. You start supposing about things that we don't know. You know, we just sometimes just get to the point and say, I don't know. You know, and so, you know, God didn't communicate to them, at least as we read it, the degree. He just said, I'm going to give you victory. And he did. But you're right, Israel was the one that carried it too far. And I think we're going back to the question, whose fault was it? It was Benjamin's fault, and it was Israel's fault. Both parties were to blame. Both parties were guilty of sin. And both parties were, as I see it, punished by God because of their transgression. So. Let's continue reading a little bit more, verses 21 or 16 through 24. And we're definitely going to get to extend into next week. All right, starting in verse 16, let's see how they solve this problem of the 200 Benjamite men who are still without women, who are still bachelors. The elders of the congregation of Israel said, "What shall we do for wives for those who are left, since the women are destroyed out of Benjamin?" They said, "There must be an inheritance for the survivors of Benjamin, so that the tribe will not be blotted out from Israel. But we cannot give them wives of our own daughters, for the sons of Israel had sworn, saying, 'Cursed is the man, or cursed is he, who gives a wife to Benjamin.' So they said, 'Behold, there's a feast of the Lord from year to year in Shiloh, which is on the north side of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goes up from Bethel to Shechem, and on the south side of Lebona. And they commanded the sons of Benjamin, saying, "Go in line, wait in the vineyards, and watch. And behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to take part in the dances, then you shall come out of the vineyards, and each of you shall catch his wife from the daughters of Shiloh, and go to the land of Benjamin. And it shall come about when their fathers or brothers come to complain to us, that we shall say to them, 'Give them to us voluntarily, because we did not take each man of Benjamin a wife in battle, nor did you give them to them, else you would now be guilty.' The sons of Benjamin did so, and they took their wives according to their number from those who danced, whom they carried away. And they went and returned to the inheritance and rebuilt the city and lived in them. And the sons of Israel departed from there, and at the time, every man to serve his tribe and family, and each one of them went out from there to his inheritance." So, thought the deal at Jabesh-Gilead was bad. This deal at Shiloh is just not a whole lot better. They seemed to be concerned that 400 men might not be enough to get Benjamin up to full strength. They had 200 bachelors remaining, and so they're trying to figure out, what can we do to prevent these people, our brother Benjamin, from being blotted out? And they fear that Israel's going to be left without one of their tribes at the end of the day. And they once again reference this oath that they made at Mizpah when the assembly had gathered together, how they had sworn not to give their daughters to Benjamin as wife. Cursed is he who gives a wife to Benjamin. So they come up with this absolutely genius idea in verse 19. They call to mind this annual feast in Shiloh. There are three mandatory feasts in which the men were required to go and to participate in and to worship in. That's the Feast of the Passover and Unleavened Bread. That's the Feast of Weeks or the Feast of Harvest. And then the Day of the First Fruits. Now, they call this a feast to the Lord. There's no general agreement from the commentators, as best I could tell. Some thought it was a Feast of Passover. Some thought it was the Feast of Harvest. Others thought that, well, perhaps this was just some Canaanite feast that had kind of cropped up from the infiltration of the Canaanite values. Whatever the case was, these men would have left their villages to assemble and participate in this feast. And, well, there's not going to be a chaste married woman out dancing, so it would be the virgins who were out dancing and celebrating. Some of the commentators, I think, to kind of smooth this over, has said, well, they're like dancing like David. This is a celebratory dance. David, if you'll remember, danced when the Ark of the Covenant came home. And they say, well, these virgins of Shiloh, this was a celebratory dance, or like the dance of Miriam after the Egyptians were drowned in the Red Sea. This is a celebration of toward God, that this dancing. Now, whether that's the case or not, we don't know. It's not terribly relevant. These virgins, they come out and dance, and we find out that they're commanded, the men of Benjamin are told by the elders. They were the source of, once again, this genius plan. There's no intervention. There's no communication. God, what should we do for our brothers Benjamin? They say, the elders put their heads together. All right, let's go. Let's go take care of this our own way. The men of Benjamin are to hide among the grapevines, and when the virgins come out, and I just can't help but laugh when I read this. Each man was to catch his own wife. So maybe you didn't find that comedic. Maybe you ladies didn't find that very comedic if you could fathom yourself in something in a position. But it all goes back to this theme that we've seen throughout chapters 19 through 21. These people departed from God's word, and everybody's acting as he thinks is best. And really, that's to me the fundamental problem with some of these other faiths. And yes, atheism is a faith, but those such faiths, it's this idea of natural selection. It's this idea of the strong survive. It's this idea of morals and the things that guide and govern how we interact with others. Something being right and wrong is based off, is this right or wrong to you? And where that road leads, when you remove God from the equation and you do what you think is right and you make right a thing that's subjective and not objective, what you do is you have crazy things like this happening. And you can look at some of the famous atheistic leaders, and you can see just the damage that was wreaked throughout history, because you take the moral compass of God's word out of someone's equation, and they do what they think is right, and it usually results in murder and genocide and all kinds of terrible things. And that's why, you know, so many of, I believe, the moral ills are caused in our country by removing God from the way that we think. Miss Johnny? Yeah, what do you think the dominant emotion was on behalf of the wives?
Oh, man.
Scared for their life, right?
Yeah, and I think that's one last sin that's terrible.
Well, this is it. God's people have deviated quite far from what God intended. You know, all throughout this process, in the handling of the battle, in the providing the wives for the men of Benjamin, they just have gone off script from what God had commanded so far. You can't even begin to fathom. You're right, that's an additional wrong, and I think we could probably call more to mind if we sat down with that intention. So we'll pick up in verses 16 to 24. I've got a few more questions that I want to ask regarding the loopholes. I do want to make some application regarding that mentality that we see dominating this chapter, and think a little bit throughout the course of the week about the book of Judges as a whole, because I want to visit that. And if you'd have anything you'd like to share, lessons that have stood out to you, then we'll conclude chapter 21 in the book of Judges next week. And I'm just going to stop after next week. If we don't get done, we're just moving on to Ruth anyway. So you do have my word on that. So thank everybody for their participation in our discussion this morning.